Okay. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Let's pick it up at verse 34. We'll read that. Paul says, there is difference also between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy, both in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And we did talk about that last week, that some the roles seem somewhat reversed now, where you have the unmarried woman who doesn't care for the things of the Lord. She's the one who's preoccupied with finding a husband, right? She's preoccupied with finding a husband, or I won't say entertaining a male companion or companion now, not just a male companion, but they seem to be the ones who have the most care for everything other than the Lord. Job, dating. You know, you notice the explosion of dating sites and dating programs now? You think all those people are unsaved?
No.
As a matter of fact, they have one now. It's called the Church. It takes a church. It takes a church where the church picks out the the mate, but well, they find prospects in there that meet the criteria for the, which is not a bad idea, because the person, at least they're already in pursuit of the Lord.
Yeah.
And the it takes a little bit of the hazard out of it. Whether you pick a guy off the street and you don't know, or a girl off the street.
Plus, what I heard is the statistics of marriages now is over 21% is online. So they don't even meet. It's a lot more communication online. Relating, one to one, eye to
right.
eye.
You know, there's nothing like, that's case in point, it's nothing like being face to face with a person. You don't see emotion over the telephone. But when you're face to face with a person, you can tell, you know what? They tell you a lot, the mouth tells you a lot. But over the telephone, yeah. Computer, unless you're Skyping or FaceTiming,
right.
But he says the unmarried woman cared for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she that is married care for the things of the world. But she that is married care for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And obviously we saw the role reversal. And I'm not saying all, but the majority. You know, it's, they'll leave home. Like Paul said, I would that the younger women guide the home. They'll be out. They'll be going to conferences, and they'll be going to gatherings, and not to mention the social things that take place. And that's the truth. I know a lot of places that they lay the food out, and the family, you know, I won't be home for dinner. You can get this out of there, and kids are on autopilot. They come in, they get the food, they cut the TV on, they see them the next day. That's not how the structure supposed, right, latchkey kids. But here, you think about, even when Paul's writing to the Corinthians, that's what I like about when Paul's writing, he's just assuming that, I don't say assuming, but he's anticipating the believers want more. He says that she may be, she's concentrating on the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. He's anticipating the single woman in Corinth.
I sometimes wonder if it's the same problem as we have today, where you go to church and you learn about the path to salvation and or how to get saved, and you get saved, and then that's it. It's like nobody really teaches you what to do next. They don't teach you, you need to be in the Word, you need to work with someone like we work with each other in this class to learn what things mean. And it's like after you get saved, it's just like, and then, okay, check.
Back to your own desires.
Yeah.
Right. You have to have the doctrine in place. You have to have that, because otherwise you're left to your own devices. And that was one of the main things, is when Paul, that's why he's writing, that's why it's written, and he writes back to them to instruct them. Where God would be at fault if he saved us and gave us no further information. He would be at fault for not giving us instruction, but he does. When he writes, even when Romans, he says, I'm writing this that I may establish you. He writes to, when he's writing to the, I believe it was the Thessalonians, where he said that he was writing to perfect that which was lacking in their faith. We all need that. Even in Second Timothy, he said we all should be what? Workmen. We all should be workmen, rightly dividing the word of truth. Shouldn't we? That's I was reading something, this was a couple of days ago, and I was reading something in the Old Testament where it was the king's responsibility to write himself a copy of the law. He was to write a copy for himself. And I thought, did I read that wrong? And I went back and they said the king was to write a copy. Do you know, if you write it, you have to do what?
Read it.
You have to read it. And then when he finished writing it, he said, now you should meditate in this day and night. Marinate in it.
That's what David should have been doing while he was on the
He should have been right. He should have been meditating in that. So his anticipation is there for you to continue in the doctrine, whether it's you're under the law or under grace. He still wants you in the word, following in instructions, following the doctrine, growing in the grace of God. He still wants that. And it's where he's writing here. He's anticipating that she careth for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy, separated, both in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the Lord, how she may please her husband. Verse 35, and this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely, and that ye may attend upon the Lord without distraction. And he said, I'm not trying to put you under bondage.
Right.
You know, you can't go out and he couldn't tell the Corinthians, don't get married. He couldn't tell them that. That would be inconsistent with grace itself. But he's saying, this is what I would like you to do, is to attend upon the Lord without distraction. And when I just said that, and I just thought about Mary and Martha. You remember that story where the Lord was there and he was preparing to go to the cross, and one of them was working to the bone. But Mary was attending to the Lord without distraction. And she should be busy.
Helping me.
She should be. Mm-hmm. And she says, you're busy about many things, but the chief thing you've left undone, and that's spending time with me. Mm-hmm. Don't we do that? But Paul's he's talking about the women here. He says, now there's two. One's busy about other things. One's busy about the Lord. Now, I can't say the roles are reversed now, because usually they're both busy about other things. The unmarried and the married. Look at second. Look at 2 Timothy. Did we talk? Did we look at this? 2 Timothy 4. Now we know Paul was saying that because of the time frame, he felt the time was short. 2 Timothy chapter 3. He felt the time was short and the Lord could return at any moment. And you can have a lot of plans, but if he shows up, all the things you want to do for Christ, it's too late for that. You know, next month we're going to make a chart. We're going to make a banner. So, you know, as time goes on.
So we got to raise some funds.
urgency. With urgency.
Right.
But, you know, we do think that you have plenty of time. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Think about this. You don't have to answer this, but be honest. When was the last time you really thought that the Lord could come back at any moment? When was the last time you really thought about that?
Yeah, it's been a while.
That's I said you don't have to answer. That's right. That's you do have to remind yourself that, like Ed said a couple weeks ago, we're just passing through here.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a permanent residence for us. We shouldn't think like that.
Mm-hmm.
We should always be looking and having that in your mind that don't get entangled down here, because everything here you will leave.
Didn't Paul say we should be waiting or anticipating with outstretched necks or something like that? Is that him?
I don't know. I'll have to. Yeah, it's. The outstretched neck is not ringing a bell to me. It could be a different terminology he used. I'm not sure. But 2 Timothy chapter 3 is what I was looking for.
2
Timothy chapter 3. He said, this know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves. Covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. We did read that. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. And when I looked at that list, he starts off with lovers of yourselves, and then he ends with lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. And he's not talking about unsaved people. He's talking about believers. That's what makes him use the adjective perilous. That's why he finishes, he said, they have a form of godliness. but they deny the power thereof. Mm-hmm. What's the power of godliness? It's displayed not just in your what where you see them like they oh they're going to church. It's displayed in their life. You can in their character, right, you see it. Not Sunday, not Wednesday. You know, one guy said the true test of a man's character is what he does when nobody's watching.
Integrity.
So, you know what? What are you doing in the private time? What are you reading in the private time? What are you watching when nobody's watching you? That's where, you know, you find out, number one, how wretched you are. Mm-hmm. Number two, you find out how gracious God is.
Found out how
wretched
I am when somebody gets in the passing lane.
When somebody gets in the passing lane. That's all it takes? What freeway do you take? Make sure I'm not in that freeway.
Was Paul talking about carnal-minded Christians? Because, you know, like in a church, you got those people who are solely dependent on the Lord. They're seeking the Lord. The Lord is their life. Then you got people that's carnal-minded. They say, but their mind is just out there, you know. And then you got folks in the church, they just church folks. They just go to church, you know. They say, it's a religion for them. They
yeah.
just go to church. So what category is he talking about here?
You know what?
Carnal-minded?
You can group carnal-minded believers in there. And even when we get here, look at the same book. Look back at chapter 2, verse 19. He says, nevertheless, and this is the same passage where he talks about a workman to not be need to not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And he says, 19, nevertheless, the foundation of God standeth sure, having this seal, the Lord knoweth them that are his. And let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity. But in a great house... What do you think the great house is?
Church.
The professing believers. And he's not, he's giving an analogy. He's not talking about brick and mortar.
Okay.
We just meet in brick and mortar. But he's talking about the professed body of Christ. Everybody's Christian. That's all.
So you're saying believers and unbelievers that claim to be believers.
That's right.
Yeah.
You don't know. They, like I said, that's just the everybody in America is Christian. They were. It's a Christian nation. Yeah. You know,
I don't like when they use that term. That word Christian means Christ one who life. Is of and for Christ. It's a follower of Jesus. And not all the time I'm a Christian because I'm not
right.
copying him, you know.
Yeah.
I think that word is very powerful. And people throw it out there, but they're not emulating him at all. They're not being a copycat of Jesus, you know. And I think when we are doing that which Jesus does, that's I'm walking in a Christian. When I'm not doing what Jesus is doing, I'm saved. But I'm not walking like Christ would walk.
And that was what Belding was saying, was like Christian means being Christ-like, and
yeah.
then it's better to use believer or something.
Yeah. But there's lots of words that are just overused that just, you know, like even the first time I heard, you know, it's a grace church, you're just like,
oh,
is it a catchphrase or, you know, it's like, because you're always used to just people advertising, and, you know, grace is something that they overuse, just, and no one really, you halfway understands it in most churches.
No, and that's, like I said, it just becomes a
grace
moniker.
God,
yeah,
it becomes a, Hallmark greeting cards.
Christians.
Yeah.
It's the Grace Church. And there's more legalism in there than under the law. But he says this. He says the foundation of God standeth sure. The Lord knoweth them that are his. And let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity. But in the great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. So when you're looking at the house, you should know that it's a great house. And there's vessels of honor, dishonor. Some you see, you know what? I could tell that man's a believer. Some you see, I couldn't tell he was a believer. And some you see is a, he can't be a believer.
Well, he's sure
disguising it well. But what, you know what? Whose responsibility is it to detect that? The Lord's. He said, now, your responsibility is not to be the spiritual policeman. What's your responsibility?
Police myself.
Police yourself.
Yeah.
He said, you name the name of the Lord. He said, if you name that name, I'm his. He says, you do what? Depart from iniquity. In chapter 1, you know what it was? It was the house of God. That's 1 Timothy. When he wrote to 1 Timothy, he says, this is the house of God. But in 2 Timothy, he says, I don't know who's in there. I don't know who's in that house now. He said, but the Lord knows. Remember we talked about the bus, you know, the wreck going down? And he said, you don't know, you can't stop the wreck. But you might be able to get some people out of the wreck. And that's what see you're not going to reform the house. Your best bet is to go in there and get some people out of the house.
Because it's going down a hill.
All right, back to chapter 7. Let's try to. He says, "In this I speak," verse 35. "In this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely, that ye may attend unto the Lord without distraction." But, right, without distraction, is without getting sidetracked. Hebrews would use it, he says, laying aside every weight and sin that so easily beset us. Let us run with patience the race. You know, it doesn't take a whole lot for us to get distracted, does it? But Paul is saying, he says, I'm saying this that you might attend to the Lord without distraction. Job. Paul said here, it's, you know what? It's the spouse, or it's the dating scene for them. That's distracting them. Isn't it? Where he said, what does he say? He says, unmarried, virgin. It's the relationships that we keep that distract us. It's the relationships that we focus on that could distract us. And you know what I like? He says, I'm not saying this to cast a snare upon you. Well, you figure if a person wants a mate, they says, oh, Paul, I can't do anything. Now that I'm saved, I can't do anything. He says, I'm not saying that. You know, Paul was this way. He says, I want you to think like I think. When he got saved, he says, Lord, what would thou have me to do? He says, I want you to think like me. Is that wrong? Is that wrong for him to think like that? That's a lot of transformation, though, isn't it?
I see that here. Paul didn't try to put nobody in bondage. You notice that?
He can't. You know why he can't? Why Paul can't put anybody in bondage?
He was in bondage at one time, but he was saved out of it.
He was saved out of bondage? And why can't he put anybody else in bondage?
He's
been given a job to free people. What'd you say? We're free in Christ. He's the apostle of what?
Grace.
The grace of God.
He's teaching them they're not under the law.
How can I build again? If I build again the things that I once destroyed, I make myself a transgressor. I can't tell you you're free and then turn around and enslave you. Even if I know it's the right thing for you. That's grace. isn't it what he wrote to the Corinthians? He says, all things are
lawful.
All things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, he says, but I will not be brought under the power of any. 36, but if any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age and need so require, let him do what he will, he sinneth not, let them marry. And that's what we were talking about last week, is it gets a little tricky in there. And you have a man here in this, the question, and obviously they're dating, if you want to say dating, or a spouse to each other, engaged, we would say. So now that he's a believer, guess what's out of the question?
Consummation.
Consummation. No fornication. That's out of the question. Now that he's a believer, maybe prior to that, who cared? But now that he's a believer, he says, wait, I find myself now. Here I am. Here we are. So keep this situation in your mind, is that you're espoused. He says.
So that's where the shotgun came from.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? And we'll see if this pans out here. If it's the father. He says, but if any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, how could a man behave himself uncomely toward his virgin? Uncomely means disorderly. Uncomely means out of order. As Paul would say, inordinate affection. Less inordinate affection. Inordinate. It means inordinate, out of order.
It's,
you know what, if you want to look at what is that verse? Colossians chapter 2, I believe. Colossians chapter 3. We'll start at verse 1. It says, if ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things of the earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall we also appear with him in glory. Mortify, therefore, your members which are upon the earth. Now, he says, you're believers, right? And this is really the same situation of in Corinth. He's just kind of expounding on it. They got saved. They're waiting for what? Corinth. They got saved. They're waiting for the Lord. Right? And they should be waiting for the Lord.
They
them to be called out.
That's why he was saying the time is short. Don't get carried away with what's going on in the world. Because this could change at any moment. But they're caught in a relationship, and if their mind was on things above, what would their mind be on? It would be on the Lord. And it would be on Christ, who is our verse 4, our life. Christ, who is our life. And when he appears, then we shall appear with him in glory. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth. You see the distinction he makes? Until we get to heaven, here's what you do on earth.
Control that beast.
And he is. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth. First thing he says, what?
Fornication.
Second thing, uncleanness. Inordinate affection. Evil concupiscence. And covetousness, which is idolatry. So when he talks about inordinate affection, Jenny, all these things are physical things. Where if you weren't married, you'd have to be careful about that. Well, even if you are married, you have to be careful about that also. When he used that inordinate affection, and that's lust. You know, you didn't know you didn't know believers, once they get saved, they still have lust. You didn't know that, did you?
I suspect. You read it somewhere?
Yeah, we read it somewhere, all right.
Back of our minds.
But, and he says, evil concupiscence. You know what in that word? In evil concupiscence. You know, it's a big word, but you think about this. In that word is Cupid. And when you think about Cupid, what do you think of? Love, lust.
Yes.
And he said, this is evil, Cupid. Your desires, not good. He says, you have to, like Ed said, you have to catch that beast. Now, if any man, in Corinthians, he says, back to Corinthians, he said, if any man find himself behaving uncomely, if he finds himself acting inordinate, if he finds the evil Cupid coming out,
if you love me,
that's the if you love me, right? Oh, it's there.
Yeah.
Think about this. This was in Paul's day. This was in Paul's day. That's one thing you know about human nature. It never changes. He says, if he finds himself if any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age and need so require, let him do what he will, he sinneth not, let them marry. The flower of her age.
Childbearing.
She said puberty. Jenny said puberty. Gerald said childbearing. Both of those are accurate. Because something happens when a woman is in the blossom of her youth. Something happens to her body.
Change. The first one.
It's a menarche. Her cycle starts. The menstrual cycle starts, right. That's when it begins. You know what happens in that cycle? Menarche. Oh, that's what it is. It's...
Learn all of it.
That's... But that's when it starts. You know what happens, and you know what happens when she's past the flower of her age. Well, that's what happens. What shows up? Well, she's ready. Right, that she knows by the blood. Because what's happening now is she's beginning to produce ovaries. Well, not produce ovaries, but she's beginning to produce eggs. She's ovulating. Thank you. And she's at that age where she can childbear. But that's the same time. They're at their peak. those hormones are raging. So that sexual tension is at a high level. So if he's behaving himself uncomely, inordinately, you know what's next. Sex is next. And he says, if you behave yourself uncomely toward her, you know,
reciprocate.
The kissing, heavy petting, all that stuff. They did it back then too. He says, if she passed the flower of her age and need so require, if you can't hold out. If you can't hold out.
Sorry, you can put burn in there, right?
Burn, right. Yeah. If you find yourself like control. That's what he said in the previous verses. He says, if you cannot contain, it's better to marry than to burn in lust.
So marry her when the thought's still in your mind, not when the child is already dead.
Yeah. That's right. Do the honorable thing before, not after. You know, there's a man in the Old Testament, Hamor, who the children of Israel, they had a daughter, a sister named Dinah. And this man was a Gentile, and he saw her.
Joseph's sister.
It was Reuben and those other guys' sister. He found her. He took her. Mm-hmm. And he forced her.
Mm-hmm. Get married.
But he loved her. He wanted to marry her.
But then he wanted to do with her after, right?
That's a different guy. That's Ammon. But he wanted to. He wanted to do what was honorable. Too late. Too late. You don't take it, then ask for it. And if he would have asked, they would have said no because he was a Gentile. But today, you know, I was just reading the paper last night about this football player where he's wanted for rape in like two cities. I'm just saying this because he's an NFL player. They are almost lined up for NFL players. Why? You know, but that shows you the human nature. You don't know what's going on in there. Inside. He's corrupt. But he says, if she pass the flower of her age and needs or require, let him do what he will. He sinneth not, let them marry. Nevertheless, he that standeth steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but having power over his own will, and has so decreed in his heart that he will keep his virgin, doeth well. Now listen, that's what we're looking at here. in the Old Testament, there was sometimes that those arrangements were necessary, where you had to get the father's permission. Where are we?
Yeah.
Where, when Paul's writing this, where are we? They're in Corinth,
yeah,
under grace. I would venture to say, in a city like Corinth, you did not have a father hanging around protecting his daughter in Corinth.
Right.
This is the man and himself. This is the man and a woman who are believers now, and they find themselves in this situation where Paul says you have to contain.
They're first generation believers.
That's right. This is right. And he says, now the wording might be a little tricky, but he says, nevertheless, he that standeth steadfast in his heart, having no necessity. This wouldn't be the father. This is the man. He says, I'm under control, Paul.
I can handle it.
I can handle it. He says, having no necessity, but hath power over his own will, and hath so decreed in his heart that he will keep his virgin, doeth well. He says, I'm not going to have sex. Like Tim Tebow. He says, I'm under control. I don't have to do it. He says, I'm okay. He says, you do well. He says, I have power over my own will. He says, and so had decreed, I have determined that this is what I'll do. So then, he that giveth her in marriage doeth well. But he that giveth her not in marriage doeth better. You know what? And I was looking at that, and this one little word in there, one little word in there that kind of clouds it. You know what it is? If you look at it, it's in italics.
Mm-hmm.
And they added that for clarification. But if you read it without that, it makes a little more sense. Where he says, So then he that giveth in marriage doeth well. Give what?
Himself.
That's right. If you give yourself in marriage, you do well. And if he's given himself, he's also given up his virginity. If he giveth it in marriage, he does well. But if he gives not in marriage, he does what?
Better.
He does better.
Can I back it up for just a second?
Sure.
Because that's what I was thinking in the previous verse when it says decreed in his heart that he will keep his virgin, that it means himself.
That's himself.
Right.
Right.
Some other woman, but himself.
And
yeah, because that's what I was going to ask. It almost seems like the verse even before that, when he's talking about, you know, get married if you must, then when it says his virgin, you're like, well, how does that work if...
And you obviously you have two people who never been together,
right.
And this is how they behave as believers. So he says, so then he that giveth her in marriage doeth well, but he that giveth her not in marriage doeth better. The wife is bound by the law. He's done with them now. He's moving on. He said, the wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth. But if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she so abide after my judgment. What was his judgment? Stay unmarried. You know what? People say that. There's Paul. He's a male chauvinist. He doesn't like women. And they'll take all those passages where Paul talks about women and they'll try to prove their point. But you know what? Paul gives you women. He gives you a higher position than any writer in Scripture. Even Proverbs, even Solomon. If you read that, where Paul, when he starts talking about the women, we'll look at I suffer not a woman to teach. Oh, see? Let the woman keep silent. See? See? He doesn't like women. Those are the verses, but they don't realize that he exalts you to a very high position. And he holds the man accountable to the way he treats you.
With the not being married part, I mean, it applies just as much as women as men when he's talking, really. He's not just saying,
That's right.
I look at it like he's just saying, these. You know, you look at anybody as a distraction or anything. So it comes across kind of harsh.
It does.
Until you realize he's just saying, don't be distracted by, you know.
Which goes back to what we were saying earlier, weeks ago, is that we are so selfish, self-centered, where we think that this program is about us. We don't think that God is doing something, and it's okay for him to say, I want your undivided attention and devotion. And you say, what? I'm saved by grace. And he said,
but your thought, your mind.
Then think about it. You know what? Where, if he's purchased us with his blood and being consistent with grace, he cannot make you serve him. He cannot make you devote time to him.
But after all he did for you, you should want to.
So, and that's what grace lays it all in front of you. And it says, okay, what do you want to do?
That's where when he says, but she is happier if she so abide, saying, but it really is in your best interest.
Just, now, what would make a woman, who she's free now, what would make a woman say, well, Paul says, I think you'd be happier if you remain single and attended to the Lord. What would make her say, no, I don't think so?
Lust.
That's Timothy. We talked about the widows. He talks about when they would, we took that, when they would, they'll be busybodies, and when they begin to wax wanton against Christ. You know, look at that. Look at the verse. He made a statement, 1 Timothy chapter 5. When he made this statement, watch how bluntly he puts this. He talks about, let's start at verse 9. Oh, wow. He says, let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, if she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. But the younger widows refuse. For when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, he says what? They will marry. It was straight to the matter of fact. He said, they will marry, having damnation because they, and that's not salvation. That's just where they've, you know what? They've left there. They've been distracted. He says, having damnation because they have cast off their first faith. And withal, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside after Satan. These believers. Yeah. So when Paul, he says, back in chapter 7, and we'll close that chapter out. He says, She is at liberty. If her husband is dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will. Only in the Lord. He's got to be a believer. Why does she have to be a believer? Why does he have to be a believer?
And she'll fall. It'll be easier for her to fall. Yeah, distracted away from the Lord.
It'll make it harder.
Yeah.
So they won't be unequally yoked.
Oh, yeah.
And that will distract her. Because then you got two heads in the bed. No, I mean, you know, you got Satan, his father's telling him what to do, and her father's telling her what to do. If you got a two-headed monster, that won't work. He says, but, huh?
No, I was playing with Ricky. He said one time, it was like about people who are unequally yoked. He said, whenever your father-in-law is the devil, you're going to have problems.
Whenever your father-in-law is the devil, you're going to have problems. Right. And you know what? Sometimes believers could act just like the devil's their father. That's what the flesh does. It's a carnal. The carnal mind is an enemy against God. So when you find yourself carnal, you know you're going to have problems in your marriage.
Well, Paul tells us we're going to have trouble in the flesh if we're married.
Somebody, because you're not always spiritual.
Right.
You're not always walking in the doctrine. And when he shows up, when the beast shows up,
sometimes
it's all right. He just, you know what? You let him out of the cage, he'll wreak havoc. But she is happier if she so abide after my judgment, and I think also that I have the Spirit of God.
Just,
you know what? I like how he said that. You know what? He closed it out graciously. He says, I'm not telling you what to do, but you will be happier if you take my advice. You know, when he finishes in Corinthians, he says, the Lord, consider what I say, and the Lord will give thee understanding in all things. And you know what? We have our issues now because we don't consider what Paul says in these matters. You know, I was at the church Sunday, and when I was telling the guys, I said, I have to leave now. And he said, well, we know you got to go. And he says, well, we really appreciate you. You know, come back anytime. He says, we know you have to go out and spread your Pauline teaching, spread your Pauline doctrine. And I stopped. I said, it's not my Pauline doctrine. This is for, right, this is what he wants for you, or for all believers. And that's where you know that they're not considering what he says.
I don't know why it is, but a lot of people got a problem with Paul. More than anybody else, boy, Paul is Paul. I mean, it's really, more than any of the other disciples, it's really target Paul.
Because he takes away their